this thought process of no matter what seat you sit in on the bus in a business, you're really just there to solve business problems. And sometimes it's technology related problems. Sometimes it's a process related problem. Sometimes it's a process that's in finance or a process that's in operations. But at the end of the day, you're just there to solve problems.
Welcome to the Disruptive Innovators, Champions of Digital Business podcast, where IT and digital leaders from around the world talk about their careers, their inspiration, and their vision for the future of digital business. I'm your host, David Wright. The world of digital business is evolving faster than ever, and I want this to be a place where digital business champions create a village to band together and help each other navigate the ever-changing terrain. Disruptive Innovators features conversations with CIOs and digital leaders from around the world, diving into their personal backstory, career, their current role, trends they've been seeing, and their vision for the future, personally, professionally, and otherwise. This podcast is made for people who are seeing how quickly the digital business landscape is evolving. Those who recognize that it takes a village of trusted advisors to navigate this ever-changing terrain. People who enjoy listening to high-level discussions surrounding what it means to be a leader, real-world examples of challenges faced, and industry-specific strategies leveraged to create exceptional business outcomes. This episode is brought to you by Disruptive Innovations, a leading tech consulting firm that helps enterprise organizations with their IT strategy, process optimization, and workflow improvement. Contact them and find out more at disruptiveinnovations.net.
Good morning, friends. David Wright here, and I am your host of the Disruptive Innovators, Champions of Digital Business podcast. And this morning, I am lucky enough to be joined by my friend Ryan Hale. Ryan, it's a pleasure to have you on, man.
Yeah, excited, David. Good to chat with you.
Absolutely. So Ryan, for those of our listeners who may not be familiar, can you just tell everybody a little bit about your current role?
Yeah, sure. I'm the Chief Information Officer at Lithgow Contracting. What is Lithgow Contracting? We are the nation's second largest concrete contractor. I always say we build relatively large things out of concrete. So distribution centers, warehouses, data centers, parking garages, hospitals, buildings up to 40 or 50 stories. And we do that in 22 different towns across America. So at any given time, we probably have 400 or 500 jobs being built within those 22 towns. And in my role, my team really provides services to the organization in three different ways. Your typical IT stuff, your network, your help desk, all of cybersecurity, all that kind of boring jazz, if you would. Data and analytics, data warehousing, visualizations, starting to play with a little bit of AI things in different parts of the business. And then more of your project management, digital transformation. How do we bring teams together to enable process change, lay technology over that to make it more effective or more efficient? Yeah, been here for about a decade now. So it's been a wild ride.
Yeah, I remember I was checking you guys out a few weeks ago. First off, I heard you mention like towns across the United States, which I just appreciated the kind of feel that you guys have, and that it just seemed very personal and very like, yes, you had scaled and now you're serving lots of different, obviously, states across the United States, but you're trying to maintain that kind of that connectedness with the town itself.
Yeah. It's been, I think there's some real secret sauce in there that we've figured out over time. We have scaled. So it's nice. You have this big safety net, quite frankly, where it's you can handle the fluctuations in the markets. The ups and downs don't hurt you nearly as bad being in 22 different locations, because all of those towns aren't going to cycle the same from an economics point, right? But at the same time, you visit any of those business units, they take on their own little local family feel. A lot of our business unit leaders are from that town or from that region. So they have a passion for that town or that area. And then we've got some business units, probably as small as 50, 75 people. We have some as big as 500, 600 people. And those towns, those people become this little family. So they know each other's wives. They do cookouts at the business unit. You know, they do together. So you got to get this, the best of both worlds. It's a cool place to work.
That's awesome, man. And I noticed too, I liked how it seems like a big commitment to D. Also, you're hiring, you're increasing jobs for all people, really. You have the people that have the experience with construction and with development and architecture and a bunch of things that I have no idea about, as well as people that want to be hands-on and get their hands dirty. So anyway, just I'm excited to be speaking with you guys. So Ryan, we like to start each episode with just one piece of actionable advice you might look to leave everybody with today.
Yeah, I have it written on my whiteboard, and every day you have to earn it, right? Like nothing is given to you. No matter what you did yesterday or a year ago or 2 years ago or a decade ago, doesn't really matter. Every day you got to show up. Every day you got to add value. I think it's no more difficult than that. You got to earn it every day. I would also give maybe another one where, so my daughter is 8 and she was in here this summer drawing on my whiteboard, and she has a rainbow with a heart in the middle and it says, do good things. So every day you got to earn it, but at the same time, make sure you do some good things along the way.
Yeah. Keep it simple, man. I've learned those little, how simple, but how profound, right? Every morning I wake up and my mantra is, I'm just a servant. Just show me. I just need to do the next right thing. If I keep it as simple as that, I'm gonna do all right. Great way to start the episode. So Ryan, I want to talk about the work you guys are doing at Lithco and dig into that. But before we do, I just want to learn and share with our audience a little bit just more about you as an executive. I think you're at L3 for a while, and I think your legacy consultant like myself, right? But so maybe you could just tell everybody a little bit about how you started out and then how you got to be the CIO that you are today.
Yeah. Born and raised here in the Midwest. So a lot of those good Midwest values of work ethic and be kind to people, continually learn, be humble, all of those things, I think my parents rooted in me fairly well. So I start with that foundation, I would say. But after school and such, yeah, I did a decade or so in professional services and consulting. I wouldn't trade that experience for anything in the world, right? I always tell young folks that are coming into the workforce, and if you just spend 2 or 3 or 4 years in the consulting world, you will see more in those 4 years than many people see in a decade or 2 decades of their career. It's just a fast-paced environment where you're being thrown into so many different situations, whether it be problem solving situations or presentations where you're telling a story and taking people on a journey of where they are versus where they need to go. Develop great interpersonal skills that you'll have the rest of your career and you can build on. But eventually, after a decade, the travel constraint and the travel component of that became pretty intense. I met my wife in an airport, for God's sake, right? Which was kind of a perfect way of putting a bow on my consulting career.
That's cool, though. It feels like the beginning of a rom-com or something like that.
Yeah, it was. Back in those days, when you were traveling, you didn't have all the crazy Delta app or whatever now. So when your flight got canceled, you lined up in line, right? You got in the queue and you sat there until they told you how long you were going to be there and what your next flight was. And she was coming to Cincinnati for a conference. I was flying home to Cincinnati and the flight got canceled, 8-hour wait deal. We happened to line up and there was a few of us there. We're like, what are we going to do for 8 hours? We might as well go get a drink and have a bite to eat. And a couple of years later, everything.
Wow.
They say pretty wild. So yeah,
that's
a little
super
bit
cool. And it's interesting just because I've found there's like this psychological phenomenon that occurs when people are delayed for a flight. Yes, it's like that people bond over that. There's like a level of camaraderie in commiserating about your situation. And
yeah, it's like we're all hosts. We might as well make the best out of it.
Right. Exactly. So anyway, I digress. That's super cool.
So a decade there, I needed to get off the road, had an opportunity here locally with L3 Communications. So I went from consulting to L3, which engineers and manufacturers pretty high technology components that go in a bunch of different things, whether it be satellites or submarines or UAVs or whatever, and was there for a couple of years. And then I got a random call from an executive recruiter, said, hey, I've got this opportunity in concrete construction. And Steve was the guy's name. And I'm like, Steve, I don't know shit about concrete construction. Like, you clearly are the wrong guy. Joined L3 a little over a decade ago now. And it's been a wild ride. In that decade, we were maybe $300 million in revenue or something when I joined. And this year we'll clock in around 1.7, 1.8 billion. So 6x revenue growth in a decade. It's been a wild ride as we figured out how to scale and still are trying to figure out how to scale. It's been fun.
Super cool. I totally agree with the advice to people about the consulting, right? I think it's just a great opportunity. You learn so much about, or I should say, I learned so much about myself, about different people around the United States, now globally, different types of companies, invaluable experience. And what would you say, either along the consulting journey or now being at Lithco for 10 years, has been one of the more important kind of lessons that you learned along your journey? And it could be personal, professional, or otherwise.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I've learned is just continue to learn. I'm in a seat that helps this organization figure out digital transformation stuff, how to scale with technology, those kind of things. But I'm not a technology guy by background. When I was at L3, I was in a continuous improvement kind of role where I was just touching various parts of the business, almost internal consultant kind of thing, right? So this thought process of no matter what seat you sit in on the bus in a business, you're really just there to solve business problems. And sometimes it's technology related problems. Sometimes it's a process related problem. Sometimes it's a process that's in finance or a process that's in operations. But at the end of the day, you're just there to solve problems. If you have this continual learning, continuous improvement mindset, that applies to anything that you do. So I've made it a quest to never stop learning, never stop being curious, no matter where I am. There's always a problem to solve. So be curious and figure out how to solve the problem with people.
Yeah. And you make it sound straightforward. And I think it is in essence, but I think like it requires a level of humility, right? Too. I've said a few times on the podcast now as of late, but the further along I get in my career and my journey as a human, the less I realize I know. But I know I've learned more things. But truly, in the grand scheme of things, the less I realize I know. Just about so many things, the universe, cultures. I'm a technologist, even other aspects of technology, right? And I also really appreciate, my mom, who's the CEO of a nonprofit, probably has a few hundred employees now, always coached me about hiring people that are smarter than her. And just as an executive now looking to scale a company, it's more important than ever. But just like in your role, right? I think now more than ever, technology is about the business. It's not a commoditized thing anymore. And it was always that way. But it was more acceptable to keep it siloed like that, where it was like keeping the lights on. Now it's fully integrated. So having someone, I would personally rather have someone like you who is business and process minded and really looking at, okay, where are the opportunities to solve for this bottleneck? Where are the opportunities to take this from 12 to 8 months? Like where are then if you need the guy who knows the nuts and bolts, who knows the programming language, who knows whatever, you bring them in and then you help coach them to learn more about what you know versus someone who's a legacy technologist. And then where do you go from there, right? It's tricky.
I think you're right though. I think maybe the only thing that I've figured out in my career that I've done okay with is being okay with not knowing the topic, learning enough about it so you can speak intelligently to it, but then also knowing enough to be like, okay, I know I can't get into the weeds on this. So I've got to go find the right people that actually can get into the weeds on this to deliver whatever it is. So you find yourself, it's your point, you find yourself hiring and surrounding yourself with really smart people that are much smarter than me on almost any topic that I talk about every day. But you got to let your ego be okay with that. Like if I could give myself one piece of advice early in my career, it's you don't have to be the smartest person in the room. Now, when I'm young and I'm out of school, I want to prove myself and all this stuff. So it's okay. I am going to be the smartest person in the room. I'm going to make sure everyone in this room knows that I'm the smartest on whatever the topic is. That's actually the wrong way of thinking about it. Because if anything, you can't scale anything if you think like that, right? You're just a really smart unit. And as soon as you can get over that and let your ego get over that and say, wait a second, I don't need all the glory. I don't need all that stuff. What I really need is I need to help the business solve whatever it is. And I'm going to bring in and surround myself with the right people that can do that. Now you've got something. I'm good being really dumb, right? Like I'm okay with that.
Yeah. I'm smiling because I identify with that so much. There was a point in my career where I saw that kind of my ego just smash. And it was actually something more personal than even professional. And it took what it took. But then after that moment, being able to rebuild myself and be right-sized and just understand that I'm just another kind of schmuck on the bus, so to speak, is just, it's refreshing. And the guys that I had, and I'll tell you, we're 4x revenue from this time last year, right? So I'm more productive than I've ever been. My head's out of my own ass, right? Finally, I have more pressure than I ever had before, but I'm not letting it manifest into stress, because the other thing that I've realized is that I can only control what I can control. And in a given moment, I don't actually know what is like good or bad, right? Like things happen, they could make me upset or they could make me angry in a moment, but then I have no idea if we lose that client. We don't lose that many, but we lose that client. Maybe we lost them because they're about to get involved in a lawsuit, or maybe we did this because of that, and things unfold as I go.
Yeah, there's a greater power out there, right? The universe is going to be what the universe is. And to some extent, we're all just along for the ride.
All I can do is the next right thing and then move forward from there. But yeah, very interesting. What about, Ryan, a time that you were either challenged or, because I brought up my experience, like with what, like that, like smash of the ego, or a time you had a project fail or something to that effect, but ultimately you took something away with that stayed with you. Anything come to mind?
I think if you're doing it right every day or every week or every month, you're failing at something, right? So much of that, I think, is just trying to be self-reflective when those moments happen and be open to that. There's so many times where, you know, oh, I don't want a Monday morning quarterback this or Monday morning quarterback that. And it's, hold on a second, that's actually how you get better. So being open to, I know not everything's going to go perfect. It's just, it's not, it can't. So I could give a bunch of examples, but I think the thing that I always just try to kind of keep it in mind is can always get better every single day. Continuous improvement never stops. And even if you, and whatever this is over here, this timeline didn't go right. This technology didn't pass the go, no go decision like we thought it would. The outcome of what we thought was going to be wasn't because we missed a bunch of requirements. Okay, got it. What did we learn from that? And what are we going to do different tomorrow? Or what are we going to do different next time? Is almost all you can do. Continually learning, right? It comes back to exactly what we talked about earlier. It's just always seeking to be better today than was yesterday, right? I don't think any more complicated than that.
Yeah. No, 100%. We were headed to the airport yesterday, myself and a colleague of mine, and I was talking to her about how all that I could ask of someone on my team or another human in general, for that matter, is to be open to continually just trying to do a little bit better each day, because we all have our flaws. We're all going to make mistakes. And to create a cult, in my experience, to create a culture of innovation and continuous improvement for that matter, I have to welcome the mistakes, not make people feel like, oh, oh shit, what am I going to do? You know what I mean? And obviously we want to measure twice, cut once. We want to avoid mistakes if possible, but they're going to happen. And it's, what do you do with it from there?
Yeah. I think the self-reflective part for me in that is with that mindset of I can always be better tomorrow than I was today. Some people find then that means we're not actually celebrating what we just did, because even when things go right, it's okay, went right. Now, what could have gone better? And what could have gone better? And what could have gone better? So trying to find those times to say, actually, yeah, what we just did was pretty damn good.
Right.
And then me, myself, pausing from saying, okay, but what could we do better? Just not everyone is built to always do better the next day and the next day and next day. In remembering, that's almost, it can almost be a personality flaw, quite frankly. Because you don't find yourself sitting and enjoying what you did. You're just on to the next and on to the next and on to the next and on to the next. And sometimes maybe I just need to take a breath and relax and look back and say, hey, we have done some neat stuff. We just did something cool.
Yeah.
Okay, on to the next. Now, what are we doing tomorrow? Or what are we doing today that, I don't know. So I think it is a bit of a double-edged sword.
Yeah. No, that's really insightful. And it's good for me to hear in this moment too, because our team has been doing such a good job, right? Like we just, like I said, revenue's up. We have new accounts, some amazing logos. And oftentimes I'm on to the next or asking that same question you're just mentioning. And for me, I have to be mindful about being present in the moment and recognize, yeah, we can celebrate this. For a moment, I like what you said, like the pause, slow down for a second.
For me personally, I find myself doing, so my wife and I have an 8-year-old daughter and a 10-year-old son. And I find myself doing it at home all the time as well, right? Like they're both very competitive. They both play sports and Evelyn will score a goal or something. Game's over. She's all excited, score a goal. And we want to celebrate it with her, but I find myself saying, yes, but you could have had two more if, and I'm like, what am I doing? What am I doing? We're talking about an 8-year-old soccer game here, right? Just let her have her moment and have fun with the fact that she scored a goal. Not that she put another one wide and fumbled over what could have been a third. Right. So
yeah.
It's a blessing and a curse to some extent.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's like the consultant in us too can breed that. Like there's a lot of benefits to it. And I think one of the things I think I forgot to mention before too is like the as a consultant, you're almost always flying a little over your skis, to be candid, right? Even as an associate or but as a senior consultant, it's your responsibility to go figure it out. There's a lot of situations where you personally probably don't have the right answer, right? And now you're going to be responsible for being the mouthpiece and telling them the answer, but you got to go figure it out.
Yeah, there's a lot of that, right? If the answer was clear, it would have already been solved. They would have already,
right.
You've already done it. They'd already changed it. So as a consultant, when you get called in, you're usually getting called in on fairly complex things where you're exactly right. There is no clear-cut answer. You don't just go over here and pull the book off the shelf and say, hey, here's the book. Or you're creating it yourself. That I think that's what was so fun about consulting, actually.
It is fun. And I love what we do. So Ryan, I want to talk a little bit more about the stuff you guys are up to at Lifco, because I think it'll be... We've had some industrial-ish companies on the podcast, but I'll tell you, I always learn so much. I remember one time we had John Deere on the podcast, and I was like, holy shit, you guys are doing that? I had no idea what they're doing with IoT sensors and with retilling land. And just, it was like, I thought you guys built tractors, and that was just like so far off. So I'm excited to learn more about that. Before we transition to that, I like to ask favorite book or literary piece either that you've been reading recently or one of your just like all-time favorites, your choice.
It's interesting because I'm not a big book guy, right? I am not a big reader, never have been, never really. To me, I find it hard to sit still long enough to read a book. I'm a massive podcast guy, and that has continued to grow over time. My my favorites list in my podcast thing, or my subscribe list is 40 or 50 deep that I scroll through. And quite frankly, I'm a bit schizophrenic with that. Like when you scroll through there, you're like, okay, the winemakers podcast. Okay, got it. That's next to The Drive by Peter Attia about how do you live longer. That's next to The Acquired podcast. That's next to Smartless, which is just Jason Bateman and a couple other dudes just shooting shit with celebrities talking about randomness. Yeah, I'm not a big book guy. I can't really add anything to your shelf necessarily, but I could recommend 3 or 4 podcasts that are staples in the car every morning.
Yeah, no, I know a couple additional podcasts, and I'm actually the same way. Like I candidly, like if I am like reading nowadays, it's usually audiobooks more than paperback, because if I'm on vacation with my 4 and my 2-year-old, like nobody's reading any books. That's not happening. And if I'm like going from one airport to another airport and like all of that, like if I can listen to something, so I identify with that completely. So Lithco, right? Exponential growth over the time that you've been there. You guys are in Ohio, but you serve states globally. Talk to us a little bit about your vision for IT and technology as it's derived from the overall mission of Lithco, and maybe some of the key initiatives you guys are working on right now.
Yeah. I think to understand some of that is to understand a bit of the construction industry, right? Construction's been around for thousands of years, right? And it's obviously very manual trade for the most part. We've got 5,500, 6,000 coworkers, something like that, of which, I don't know, 5,200, 5,300 are out on job sites every day, planning and executing jobs, swinging hammers, right? Doing manual work in the hot, in the cold, in the wet, in the snow, all that stuff, right? We say we have 22 locations, but we've got 500 jobs that have job trailers scattered across those 22 locations. And the interesting part about that is we may be on a job site for 3 months. We may be there for 12 months, but that job trailer is moving within a year. So you have 500 sites that are constantly popping up and going away and popping up and going away. So when we think about technology solutions to support that, you have to be extremely flexible. And scalable, obviously, when you're talking about that many locations and that many places. Also, the construction coworker that we would have on a scale of uber technology savvy to not technology savvy, they would certainly fall towards the not as technology savvy spectrum than I work at Google or Meta or whatever, right? Very technology savvy. They don't sit in front of a computer all day. Now, they have an iPad on the job site because they're looking at drawings and that kind of thing, but they're out and about, right? And just the type of individual that tends to gravitate toward construction, they're a bit of no-nonsense kind of folks, right? Coloring things in flowery language isn't typically going to be well-received, right? The dynamics of that means that whatever technology solutions we bring to our folks, they have to be nimble, scalable, flexible, very easy to consume, and just makes sense, right? There's not going to be the bullshit meter is very low. So I think you've got to understand those variables. And then the last variable too, that's certainly weighing on my mind a lot lately, is just the aging workforce. You know, there is and you can read about it all over, there's a massive labor shortage in construction, right? At baseline. And then when you look at the pool that you have then of individuals that are in these trades, 30%+ of them are over 50 or over 55, right? So you got to look and start saying within a decade, you're going to lose 30% of your workforce. And that 30% of the workforce, they don't sit behind a desk. So like writing down specifically what they do isn't what they do. A lot of the knowledge is up here, right? They've learned that knowledge by building buildings, by trial and error, right? I think it was Nick Saban that said football players get better by playing football. Same thing with construction. You get better building buildings by building buildings. And it's not all very well documented all the time. It is between the ears. So when I look at all those variables, we're like, we've got to figure out how to not only deliver easy technology to the fingertips of folks with the right information and the right way they would want to consume it at the right time in this very dynamic situation they're in on a job site, where if it rained the day before, okay, that completely changes my plan today, right? Or it's going to rain this afternoon, so that could change my plan this morning. But we've got to figure out how to give those solutions to folks that are going to have less experience. But we've got to figure out a way to do it that makes them 10 or 15 or 20 years more experienced than they really are, because a lot of the experience is getting ready to walk out the door.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating set of variables that we're playing with right now.
It's funny because some folks from a company, have you heard of Flowserve? They do flow management and global infrastructure, so another industrial-ish type of company. A lot of similar, and it's not unique to industrial companies either. Like the baby boomer kind of population that is now retiring and will continue to retire over the next however many years, is leading to labor shortages in a number of different industries. And the impact on knowledge management is not insignificant, right? Because a lot of this institutional knowledge, or even like the knowledge you're speaking to, isn't even necessarily institutional. It's real work, like how to do the work, right? I guess so. That's all just to say that I think the tools that we're seeing now in generative AI and some of these newer large language models, the impact that it'll have on quickly getting a handle on this knowledge, it's going to really help a lot of different types of companies. So I'm grateful that all this is happening, because something that would have otherwise taken years, right, to document and index and appropriately query, we should now be able to do in 6 months, the amount of time it takes somebody to dictate all of that.
Yeah, I think that's right. And not only would have taken years, would have taken millions, would have taken millions of dollars. In this, just like many industries, construction is a very low overhead kind of business, right? There's no way I would have been able to find millions of dollars to solve this problem. I'm with you. I'm really hoping that some of these generative AI tools that are easy to interact with, that are easy to use, is a big piece of the solution for us, I think, right? We've got structured data. We have ones and zeros, dollars and cents, safety incidents. We have loads of data all over this business. Probably better than most in the construction industry, I'll say. Like, it is a core competency of ours. It is part of what we do. We are a very data-driven organization. I think the challenge for us is taking all that data and turning it into actionable information. I'm not sure we do that great right now. We have a lot of visualizations. We have a lot of reports that are good at telling a history lesson at the end of the day, right? It tells you what has happened, right? I think for us, well, we've got to figure out how to unlock, given some of the variables I mentioned and given this aging workforce that's going to leave this massive experience gap, is if we can take a lot of this data we have, and we could use some data science-y, fancy math kind of stuff to say, okay, historically, when this has been seen on a job site, or this is happening on a job site, or we're working in conditions like this, then typically this has happened over time. There's been a 400% chance in injuries if we're working on work that looks like this or whatever. I think that's good. And that's a step we have to take. But if we can then say, if we see this tends to happen, and oh, by the way, over here in all this unstructured data we have, here is a way to solve it. here is a potential best practice to use. Here is a process to use. Here is photos of what bad looks like and what right looks like. Or here is a short video clip to say, when we saw this last, here was the root cause. Therefore, here's what you should plan to not do. If we can make that connection, qualitative data, quantitative data, bring them together at the right time to the right person, hoo-wee, then we're cooking with gas. Then we're cooking with gas. And these Gen AI tools, I think, will help enable that in a much, much more inexpensive way than if I had to, a decade ago, hire an army of data scientists and developers, because it would never happen. Not in this industry.
Yeah, no, 100%. Not in a lot of them. Oh, crazy. What would you say are some of your biggest, I mean, we talked about some of the challenges that you guys are experiencing as a business. Obviously, you've, you know, had a lot of success in recent months, but any other challenges you might mention that you guys are going through right now?
Yeah, with this much growth that we've had in a relatively short amount of time, we find ourselves trying to go back and plug the gaps that have inevitably been made just by the continual 20, 30% year-over-year growth, right? So, hey, don't get me wrong. That's a blessed problem to have. We've been very blessed or lucky or both to continue to do that over time like we have. But man, oh man, it leaves real gaps in the organization. It leaves real gaps in your processes that, as you've added organizational complexity, the processes haven't been kept up as maybe they should. They haven't been improved like they should. They haven't been re-engineered maybe like they should. So we're trying to fix all of that while also still saying, like, we don't see ourselves slowing down. We continue to see more towns that our business model would fit very well in, whether we greenfield them or we acquire into them. We believe there's different verticals, adjacencies that are to the right and left of new commercial concrete construction like we would do today. So this business, in our minds, is only going to get bigger. It's only going to get more complex. So trying to right the sins of the past decade, right? With, wait, how do we still continue to plan for growth and drive the growth is really challenging right now. And then you lay on top of that just naturally as you get bigger, trying to figure out this balance of letting the organization and keeping the organization nimble with, you got to have some level of oversight. I don't want to use the word bureaucracy, but maybe for a minute I'll use it, with the right amount of supervision.
Governance,
right? But you don't want to crush this entrepreneurial spirit, which is where we started this, of our towns are like these little families. So we've got this balance everywhere we look right now of what's too much governance, what's not enough, what's the right amount, right? It's what's the right amount of growth, given we still have all these holes over there. It's a weird Rubik's Cube that we're trying to solve right now. It's fun. It's really fun, but it's also challenging.
Yeah, super interesting. And not even, like, I think a lot of companies find themselves in that type of position during, well, as they scale. We're totally different level of that, but similar challenges. So, Ryan, yeah, I mean, this has been great.
Finding the right talent to lead in an environment like that's hard.
Right.
It's really hard because you're asking people like, hey, do what you're doing today, but always do it better. We could always be better. And let's also think about what tomorrow could look like.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a challenging environment to stick talent into. So.
Yeah. No, definitely. So a couple last questions I have for you, Ryan. One would be, what are some of the most exciting kind of technologies that you guys are working on right now, or that you have on your roadmap, and or where do you see this industry, like the concrete industry, going in the future? What do you think will be some of the biggest changes as time passes?
Yeah, and this study's a few years old, right? But McKinsey, I think it was, released a study of technology adoption across 30 different industry kind of silos, banking or healthcare or whatever. And out of the 30-ish that they ranked, construction was second from the bottom, only to agriculture. But sounds like I should talk to the person you chatted with at John Deere. We could share some war stories, right? But the point there is there's a lot of technology adoption, I think, that's going to be in the future. If anything, going to have to become more effective and efficient, given that 30% of the workforce is getting ready to retire the next decade, right? And I think that's also part of the reason you've seen a lot of investment in construction technology, which is awesome to see. Like over the past 7 or 8 years, you've seen so many technologies pop up, whether it be just workflow and automation kind of stuff, or whether it be on the job site. Hey, how could we fly drones to understand percent complete on a job? Or how could we use augmented reality where when I'm out there walking on the job site and the rebar is laid in a very specific configuration according to the drawings before we pour the concrete, that I could hold my iPad up and I could see where the rebar should be versus where it is, so I know if it needs adjusted before we pour concrete and that stuff hardens. Or you're going to see more and more of that. And we're piloting a lot of that kind of stuff on various jobs, whether it be the flying drones or whether it be the augmented reality kind of stuff, or whether it be how can we create our trainings in a different way where for key trainings, you could put a set of goggles on in the job trailer or the office and you could look around and we literally have someone walking on the job site pointing out safety hazards. So we're playing with a bunch of different stuff.
Wow.
Let alone the concrete science side of this thing, which does not fall under my technology umbrella. But we've got a group internal to Lithgow that's working with suppliers to figure out how we can change concrete itself, where instead of—
We need that in New York. Everything's falling apart.
Where instead of pouring these, you know, massive floors for a huge distribution center that's 12 inches thick, could you change some of the things that go in that mix or how the concrete is laid down and finished where between those two things, you only need 6 inches of slab versus 12. And benefits of that look like some cost saving, sure, but it also looks like a bunch of carbon reduction for the environment itself. So we're constantly experimenting and playing with a bunch of different stuff in the across the organization. And then, yeah, this whole AI thing, trying to figure out like, no shit, right? What does this really mean to us? How would we really roll this out at scale is a big code that we've got to crack. I think a lot of people have to crack, but we've got to crack because it's not going anywhere, right? This stuff isn't going anywhere. But what's real versus what's cool on a sales deck and how to deploy it at scale is a real thing.
How do you not end up with a bunch of point solutions?
Yeah, no, 100%.
It's like you said, it's not unique to you guys. Ryan, this has been awesome. I could keep talking about this for a long time. I never thought I'd be so interested in concrete. So,
I never thought I would work in concrete and I never thought I would be this interested in it. But it actually is a really cool industry.
It really is. And the company is really impressive. So I'm really glad we connected. It's funny, Ryan, I usually ask if you can go back 5, 10, 15 years in time, what advice would you give your younger self? You did throw something out earlier. So I would ask you to either remind our listeners what you said earlier, or if you had another piece of advice that you would give your younger self, what would you offer?
Yeah. I think what I threw out earlier is you don't have to be the smartest person in the room. I think what I would add though, and we touched on it, right? Around this just mindset of continuous improvement is like, just slow down and try to enjoy what you're doing. Right? We're doing cool stuff at work. I've got cool stuff going on in my personal life. Like I've got to be better reminding myself, just take it in for a minute, man. You don't always have to go accomplish the next thing or challenge the next thing. Like just enjoy life for a moment, maybe. Or it's simple, but I don't do it well.
Yeah, it's easy to, especially when you're enjoying the thing, to go on to the next thing for me. And I also have to, there was a distinction I learned early on about, oh, I have to do this or I want to do that. And that actually helps me too, is like when I'm like, oh, I have to slow down. It's no, I want to slow down. And it's simple, but I don't know. For some reason, like when I like think about the distinction, it helps me sometimes.
Yeah, that's an interesting little trick, right? The similar to that, and again, heard it on a podcast, And I don't remember the gentleman's name, but he was on the Sully Sullenberger flight that landed in the river, whatever that was, a decade ago now or whatever.
Yep.
Right. And this guy was like a PE kind of guy. So he's traveling like mad, right? I don't remember what he said, 300 plus days a year, something crazy. And he said, when you're on this flight and all of a sudden you realize, oh, this is real, we're going to crash, right? He's like, you've got this short amount of time where like your life kind of flashes in front of you. And your mind runs all these things. What would I have done different? Et cetera, right? And then, of course, then they land and they all get off and they all live, right? So now he's gone from this moment of, I'm going to die, oh shit, to wait a second, I'm going to live. But he's that moment in time completely changed his mindset on things, right? And what the one part that I took with me that I try to put through this same filter now, especially when it comes to, you know, networking groups or, hey, do you want to attend this? Or, hey, we're hosting this thing. We'd love for you to attend, right? All of these things that take away from the time that you have with friends or family or whatever. He said, I put everything through this filter. I think it was on Peter Attia podcast. And he asked him, he's like, so what boards do you sit on and things like that? And he's none. It was like this record scratch moment. Right? None? He's like, yeah, none. I don't sit on any. He's like, because everything that I say yes to, I'm saying no to something else.
Yeah.
And given what he had been through, that was his mindset shift after that. He's, I'm traveling way too much. I'm involved in way too much. And I'm not fostering the relationships that literally are right around me that I should be fostering. So there's maybe another kind of funnel to put this, I need to slow down versus I want to slow down, right? Like this other, maybe another funnel to put it through. If I say yes to that, I'm saying no to this. So which one's more important?
Yeah. Yeah. I know it's so true. And I mean, we can go on forever.
Well, this is an awesome ride, David.
Yeah. No, thank you, man. It was super insightful. I'm glad you brought it up. I've enjoyed this conversation so much. I'm going to have to catch you next time. I'm passing through sunny Ohio, so count on that.
Absolutely, man. Would love to.
But I'll have to time it so it doesn't take away from the other things.
I'll make time for you. Don't worry. Don't worry.
Thank you so much, Ryan. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in. We'll catch you all next week.
Thanks, David.
Thank you for listening to the Disruptive Innovators Champions of Digital Business podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and subscribe to enjoy future episodes. This episode is brought to you by Disruptive Innovations, a leading tech consulting firm that helps enterprise organizations with their IT strategy, process optimization, and workflow improvement. Contact them and find out more at disruptiveinnovations.net.